In terms of the topic, so I'm gonna recopy this. I would I, what I want what I wanted to today is I want to actually continue the conversation we began last week, where we spoke about showering on Shabbos and Yontif. And throughout that discussion, we primarily mentioned the primary prohibitions or rabbinic prohibitions that relate to actual showering, relating primarily to hot water use or a rabbinic prohibition called Zeret Merchatzot. The rabbis instituted some prohibition of showering on Shabbos, even with water heated before Shabbos, due to the batlanim, some people who would cheat the system and pretend they had heated the water at the wrong time. We talked all about that last week. We spoke about those issues relating to, actual showering. What I'd like to talk about today is what I'd call the ancillary issues, the issues which don't directly relate to showering or bathing or anything of the like, but because they are issues that relate to Hilchos Shabbos, that you might transgress some of the prohibitions of Shabbos. As we saw last week, a minhag developed, especially among Ashkenazim, that we are not going to bathe in cold water due to these ancillary reasons. So let me share my screen and we can go through some of these sources. Why is this not working? Okay, there you go. The chat. Recording, yes, it is recording, it's on my computer, yeah, it is recording. Okay, so I want to begin with what I call ancillary issues. These are ancillary issues, and really the source, primary source, but we have to start this whole discussion is from the Maharil. The Maharil is a Rishon. I'm never good at names, so I actually forgot his name. You can look it up. He lived in the 1300s in Germany, in Worms, and in Remise, I think. And he writes the following. He says, "Mikol Makor." This is source number 25. This is on page 6, bottom of page 6. So he says as follows: "Mikol Makor Hincha De'Esher Litvol B'Chol Lo Avdin Be'Ovd L'Chatchila Mishum Chashash Kama Isurin." The discussion here is not really relevant to our topic. He's talking about tefillah when it comes to women or men who are going to the mikvah for whatever reason on Shabbos, whatever reason it is. So he's explaining that there is a custom that developed to not go to the mikvah, to not bathe at all in any water on Shabbos, because of a concern of several different prohibitions. For this very reason, there became a minhag to not bathe in cold water on Shabbos, even though, as we saw last week, in terms of the prohibition of Gzeret Merchatzot, there really is no prohibition of bathing in cold water. Nonetheless, a minhag developed in Ashkenaz to not bathe in cold water due to a concern of what of ancillary issues, some other prohibitions that might arise while bathing or showering in cold water. What are these reasons? So the Maharil in the 14th century writes as follows: "Time to shach the migzar. The numbers are mine. But just keep track of the numbers. First reason is because of mishum schita, because you might squeeze out the water from your hair or from your body or from the towel potentially. You might squeeze out the water, and that's one problem that happened. Number two, mishum nosei dad amod bekarmelit mayim she'alav. Problem number two is because you might carry the water that's on your body, right? Imagine yourself, you're coming out of the pool, coming out of the river, and then you walk from the river, right, to your home. Your body is still wet, and you're carrying on your body, you're carrying water. And because you're carrying water, so assuming you're not in a place with an Eruv, you would have transgressed, at the very least, a rabbinic prohibition of carrying in a Carmelite, in a non-Rishit Rabbin, but a rabbinic prohibition of carrying on Shabbos that water that's on you. As well as potentially the towels on you might be carrying that as well. So therefore, the prohibition of carrying, and there's a concern of bathing for that might arise that concern. Problem number three, umishum shiyate gufa, because you might end up swimming, and there's a rabbinic prohibition against swimming on Shabbos, because if you go swimming, then you might end up building a raft. And so swimming, in just technical halachic terms, swimming itself actually means that you lift your feet off the ground in a river or something of the like. Actually, a swimming pool would actually not be a prohibition of swimming. It might be the other prohibitions, but that's a discussion for another time. But there's a prohibition of swimming, lest you end up building a raft. That's a rabbinic prohibition from the time of the Gemara. And number four, vikisamin, because you might end up cleaning the water. So let's go through, before we go through and explain all of these different reasonings and go through them, and that's kind of what I want to do this year, I want to just talk about for a second about this very minhag. And it's worth mentioning first is that the Maharil is actually not talking about just bathing in general. The context of his tshuva is actually about going to the mikvah. And going to the mikvah is a mitzvah. I mean, if you're a Baal Keri and you have your Hasidic minhag to go to the mikvah, that might not be really a mitzvah, it might be a Hasidic idea. But if you're a woman who was a nida, was a menstruating woman, who is tmeah, who is forbidden to her husband, to not go to the mikvah is a mitzvah de'oraita, a Torah-level mitzvah, So much so that we make a bracha on the tefillah. You make a bracha on mitzvah tefillah when you go to the mikvah. It clearly is a mitzvah. And nonetheless, despite the fact that it is a mitzvah, the Ma'aril is quoting this custom to not go to the mikvah on Shabbos due to these concerns. So we see then that these concerns, at least for Ashkenazim, that the Ma'aril is quoting, really are very serious concerns. And they're not just like some side idea that some rabbis instituted, but really, it seems like it really took force within the Ashkenazic world. Yeah.
Before somebody gets the wrong idea, which I think they might get, is we don't paskin like the Ma'aril. Like, women do go to the mikvah on Friday night.
Yeah, so actually, I really do want to talk. I was planning on only having a two-part series in terms of showering, but I decided actually that I'm going to do a three-part series. And the third shiur, the one that's going to be after Shavuos, I actually want to talk specifically about mikvah, because there's actually a lot of issues relating to mikvah, specifically Ashkenazim versus Sephardim. There's really a lot of issues, not just the mikvah in cold water, but also, as most mikvahs nowadays are, heated. So there's a whole range of issues that arise when it comes to mikvahs in hot water. Very much relates to the topics we've spoken about last week and this week. So we are going to talk about mikvahs. Yes, the standard minhag among Ashkenazim is that women, for the most part, go to the mikvah on Friday night. I'm going to say there's an addendum there, but I'm going to leave it out, and we'll talk about that in 2 weeks. We'll talk about that in 2 weeks. But this is certainly the minhag that Ma'aril is talking about, that ideally you shouldn't go to the mikvah on Friday night. He's talking about under certain conditions. We're not going to discuss those conditions. That's what he's talking about. And you look at source number 26, the Truma Tadeshin, another very early Ashkenazi posek. Both the Truma Tadeshin and the Ma'aril are these Ashkenazi posekim living in the turn of the 14th century. And both of them are really very significant Ashkenazi posekim. And when I say Ashkenazi posekim, what I mean by that is that they end up being kind of like the students or the grand students kind of the Tosafists. And they end up, for many of their recorded writings, end up influencing what Ashkenazi practice is. So Ma'aril, for instance, has a whole book of Minhagim, and we've practiced many of his Minhagim. I understood he's even a cantor, and many of the songs or original songs that we used to sing came from the Ma'aril. They really influence a lot of the way our Minhagim is going to Ashkenaz work. And so look at Truma Tadeshin, source number 26, and he's talking about a similar topic about going to the mikvah on Friday night. And he has a whole long discussion, not really our issue for now, but he mentions, as part of this discussion, he says, nowadays, there is this prevailing practice that people do not go to the bathe on Shabbos at all, even for cold water, whether it's a mikveh or whether it's a river. Even though we actually have no source that there is a prohibition. And not only is there no source, it sounds like the Afil Ba Mordechai, the Machmi Lechot Bebrecha, Mikol Makom Makir Behedya Benahar. Even the Mordechai that quotes an opinion that prohibited to go swimming on Shabbos, it's very clear that at least for the Mordechai, it'd be permitted to go bathe in a river. The Efter Adua Dinami Mikvah Shalanu, and according to the same source, you seem like you'd be equally permitted to go to the mikvah. Nonetheless, Mikol Makom Aminag Huli Zaher V'Noah. Nonetheless, the minhag has developed that we do not go to the mikvah, we do not bathe in cold water. And this minhag, as quoted in the Ma'aril, quoted from the Tadeshin, is cited in the Magen Avraham, source number 27. We saw this last week briefly. And Mishnah Berurah quotes it in source number 28 as well. I'm not going to read them inside, but they're just summarizing and just quoting these sources. This really becomes standard practice within Ashkenazim that we do not go bathe in cold water on Shabbos. Any questions or comments so far? Okay. Yeah. Right, so we talked about this a little bit last week within the Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, and maybe if we have time, we'll talk about it at the end of tonight. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a whole tshuva discussing the prohibition potentially of showering in cold water on Shabbos, and he talks about it, is it really a minhag? So in his opinion, and I think it's clear for other poskim, when it comes to the prohibition of bathing in cold water, it's clearly a minhag. It's quoted in these early sources. It's clearly codified. It has all the variations of a minhag. It might even be stronger in some ways than a minhag. From this presentation. Rav Moshe Feinstein wanted to argue that when it comes to showering, for that, there is no minhag against showering, and we saw that last week. We'll see it again maybe at the end of this year today. Showering might be different. But certainly in terms of bathing, clearly is a minhag for, it maybe even be stronger than minhag. The fact that it's quoted in all of these sources gives me the impression it might be even a little bit stronger than Minhag. Maybe it's like a halacha that's been developed, you know, later halacha. How exactly to classify it might be a little difficult, but that's kind of what how would I call it.
It sounds like he's talking about it as the Minhag that has the force of halacha.
Yeah, it's like it's a very strong Minhag. Rice Berber has like a lot of discussion about Minhagim and their force, and he has different ways of characterizing how strong certain Minhagim are. This is certainly one of the stronger Minhagim on his list. Okay, let's go through some of these reasons that appear in the Maharil, and we'll talk about some of the modern variations of these reasons, because they're not all the ones that apply back then apply nowadays. So let's go through these reasons. What are these ancillary concerns that develop this Minhag in Ashkenaz to not bathe in cold water? So reason number four, we're going to start backwards. But reason number four, related to this problem of what he called kesamim. And you look at the Aruch HaShulchan in source number 29, he kind of explains a little bit more what this means. V'od sarich lizaher banahar, shelo lashut. So reason number three, sorry, was not to swim. So that we talked about, that's a prohibition against swimming based on a rabbinic concern that maybe you end up building a raft, you don't know, you're going to start drowning or get tired, you end up building a raft, prohibition of bona. So there was a prohibition, therefore, of swimming on Shabbos. That's the prohibition of, that's why we're concerned about going into a river. Of course, if you're bathing, you know, in a bathtub or in a shower, you know, you're not really going, we're not really concerned about swimming. That's not really a problem. You're not really swimming in a bathtub or in a shower. So that's not really going to apply for most of our scenarios. We're going to skip that reason. Reason number four that Mariel mentioned was the Gama Kesamin, refers to like wood chips. Tamufuzarin, Asur la filan al pneamayim, lekan lekan, kedei lenakot hamayim b'makom sho made behem. So there's another concern that if you are in a river, and the river is, you know, it's a fairly clean water, but maybe it's a little bit dirty. Maybe there's something on the top of the water. Maybe there's some type of wood chips or some other, you know, grass or something on top of the water. And what are you going to do? You're going to walk into the water and maybe just without even thinking about it, maybe you're going to kind of spread apart the, you know, the wood chips on top of the water just so it's a little cleaner right where you're standing. So what's the concern? Why would that be problematic? Because you might be transgressing the prohibition of borer, of separating, of cleaning out, separating between, you know, a forbidden mixture you don't want and something you do want. Borer, we often think of borer simply in terms of food, but borer applies, or perhaps merakeh, depending on how you classify it, might certainly also extends to the prohibition of liquids as well. You cannot, you know, sift between different liquids and, you know, sift between oil and water or something of the like. That would be also problematic. So here too, there's a potential concern that if you are in a river and you go swimming in the river or bathing in the river, sorry, and you might push aside the wood chips or whatever dirt on the top of the water, and by doing so, you have done the prohibition of borer, of separating out between the good and the bad. Yeah, there is some literature about non-food items. It's a large debate. Not everyone agrees about it. It depends on who you ask. It's a larger topic. I'm going to pass on the topic. But certainly it is true that borer extends more than just food, certainly also liquid, maybe also to non-food items as well. I'm going to pass on that discussion. But that's the issue. So the problem is taking the main problem is taking the good away from the bad away from the good. That would be the main problem. But even if you take away the good from the bad, which not you're doing in this case. In this case, you're actually moving away the bad. You're taking away the wood chips. Even in the other scenario, it might still be problematic in certain situations. We're not really going into the details of borer here, but either way, it certainly would be problematic. Of course, all of these problems would only exist if you're talking about, you know, a dirty river. I don't know where everybody else's bath, but my bath at least is not so dirty that I'm separating out. So it wouldn't really apply for us nowadays, but it is in terms of historical problems. This is what the Maharil is talking about. That's problems three and four in the Maharil. Finally, let's talk about problem number two, which the Maharil brings up, which was the problem of nosei dad amot bekarmelit mayim shelav. The concern that you might be carrying the water, right? When I leave the river, water obviously naturally stays on my body. I can't, you know, I'm not dry right away. Some water is absorbed in my body or is my body still wet, and I'm therefore carrying the water when I walk outside, walk into the Carmelite or into the Shuta Rabbim, and I will have violated either a Torah level prohibition or at least a rabbinic level prohibition of carrying on Shabbos. That's the concern that Mario brings up. Yeah.
If that's Hotzah, then how can you walk anywhere once you've been rained upon?
Oh, excellent question. Okay, let's get there in a second. Thank you. We'll get there. Okay, so let's go through. We'll get there in a second. So carrying water. Let's go to source number 30. Where did this come from? There's a prohibition of carrying water on Shabbos. Carrying water on your body, meaning not just like a water bottle. Amar Rav Yehuda. This is Maran Shabbos on Daf Kuf Mem Aleph. Amar Aleph. Source number 30. Amar Rav Yehuda. Man Disachi Maya. A person who bathes in the water. Lingub Nafshe Bereshe. First, before they leave the water, they should dry themselves. Vihadar li slick, and only after they dry themselves, they should leave the water. Excuse me. Dilma ati li tui arba amot bekarmelit, lest they end up carrying the drops of water on their body for amot in a karmelit. Right? And this is explicitly that concern the Mariel is mentioning. It's quoted in the Gemara, and indeed it is quoted lahalacha in the Shulchan Aruch, source number 31. Shulchan Aruch says, Haroches banar, if you're bathing in the river, you have to be sure to walk, to dry yourself very carefully when you leave the river. Because we're concerned that you might have water drops on your body and you'll be carrying them when you walk through the Carmelite or in a Shuzarabin, you'll have violated the Torah or biblical or rabbinic level prohibition of carrying on Shabbat, one of the 39 malachot forbidden on Shabbat. Great. So that's all with regard to carrying, that's with regard to the problem the Mariel brings up of carrying water that remains on your body. Now, as Alan asked, it's kind of a side note, but it is a really worthwhile thing to mention. What about, you know, when it rains? Why aren't we concerned that the water that's now on your body, on your head, or whatever the water falls, or on your clothes, why aren't we concerned that now you're carrying water which is on your body? So the Shulchan Aruch asks explicitly in source number 31, the second half of that source, he says, "Aval holech b'shut harabim, even if you are in a Torah level prohibition of carrying, you're in a shut harabim in a public domain, umatar sochef al rosho ve'al levusho, and rain covers your body, covers your head and your clothes, lo hikpidu bo, the rabbis are not strict about this, they did not consider it to be a problem of carrying. Why not? Why is there no concern of carrying on Shabbos when you're being rained upon, just as they're concerned about leaving the river? So a few different reasons are given in the Achronim. Source number 32, the Taz quotes two reasons. First, he quotes, and this is the main reason most people quote, the Beit Yosef quotes, Yosef Cairo in his commentary on the tour, says as follows, Natan Tam, Lefishem Mu'atin, Lo Gazru Aleha. So the first reason that Beit Yosef suggests is because the water, the rainwater, is not so much. Right? There isn't that much water on you, and therefore, because there's not that much water, the rabbis did not prohibit it. They didn't make a gzera against only a little bit of drops of water. That's reason number one. That's quoted really in a lot of sources. However, you might say to yourself, great, so that might be true when it rains a little bit. But sometimes it rains a lot, and you can get soaked. And you know, I'm sure all of us in our lives at some point have gone soaked. And so the Taz actually asks this question. He says, "V'ein maspik de'einenu ro'ot she'esh yoter ribui mayim min ha'matara levushi adam mima she'esh al gufo." What are you talking about? If it rains hard, it's going to rain. There's going to be more water on your body than there is when you leave the river, right? You could be soaked. You could be drenched, you know, a lot more wet than you would be leaving, you know, a body of water. So what are we talking about? So instead, Elanir Hatam. So instead, the Taz gives a different reason. The Bazei Efsher Limanem Menu SheAdam Holech Bereshut Rabim UPitom BaMatar Alav Lo Gazer BeRabanan. The rabbis did not prohibit a situation of walking in a street because the rain happens, you know, almost naturally, automatically, and there's no way to avoid it, right? So because it's almost an unavoidable situation, you're going to be walked upon, the rabbis did not prohibit you from, you know, walking outside if all of a sudden rain is going to come upon you, right? They didn't prohibit you from leaving the house. What about if it's already raining? Yeah. Sorry, David, yeah. Absolutely. I think it's not just about leaving home to go to shul. I actually think the Taz's argument, let me say one point before I get back to your point. What if it's raining already, right? The Taz specifically is explicitly arguing the point about if it's, you know, it's not raining yet, so we're not going to prohibit you, you know, lest it begin to rain. What if it's already raining? Or let's say I know the forecast and I know it's going to be raining at this time. Can I leave and walk outside? So the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the Alter Rebbe explicitly writes source number 33. He quotes the same reason, and the end in the parentheses he says, "Aflat save me beito b'shata geshem she'ein la'esor dabar l'chasayin." He thinks there's no prohibition because the rabbis aren't going to, what he calls, lesor davar l'chasayin, going to make, you know, differentiations in situations. Once they're going to give a permission to walk outside when it's raining, or lest it rain, they're not going to, it's going to be a blanket permission, a blanket, allowance, and they're not going to start differentiating between situations. If I were going to say this a little bit more abstractly, to take it out of these sources, what I think the Taz and the Shulchan Aruch Rav are really arguing, and something that's really important, potentially in all of Hilchos Shabbos, is that there's a certain aspect of halacha that relates to, you know, normalcy. That it's not just about the mitzvah of, you know, going to shul on Shabbos. I actually think it's more than that. That there's a certain point where Shabbos just becomes too, if we had to be concerned, you know, every time it was going to rain. You know, I lived in, you know, a climate that rained often. I lived, you know, in London or something, and it rains all the time. What, like, your Shabbos would have to be stuck at home, lest it rain and you get wet. Your Shabbos would be crazy. It wouldn't be like a Shabbos at that point. And I think there's a certain point where halacha recognizes the idea of normalcy, that, you know, there, things are going to happen, and nonetheless, the rabbis are not going to prohibit it. This idea, I think, is a very far-reaching idea that might extend to other places. Right, we're not going to extend in Makom La'arich Achshav. We're not going to start extending. I'm not going to expand upon where it might extend to, but it certainly has a lot of implications. Yeah, Alan. Yeah. Okay, so let's take that one. Yes, let's take that. Yeah, Micah, yeah. Yeah, so I think so. In short of it, first of all, for the most part, most people are walking in very rarely you're going to walk in what's called Rishus Rabim D'Oraita, in like an actual public domain. Most things are usually Carmelite, you know, outside of like, you know, Times Square. You're really, for the most part, walking Carmelite for various reasons. Maybe we'll talk about in the future here about the definition of Rishuyot and Erevin and the like. But for most part, you're only dealing with rabbinic prohibition. Secondly, there might be also a sheer amount you have to carry, and we're carrying only, you know, drops of water on your head. It's not clear that it really be a Torah prohibition. It might be, it might not be. There's a lot of debate about it. That may be part of the reason for why it's called a rabbinic prohibition here. I think that's generally the argument behind it. With regards to the second point that Sally mentioned, the point about the Pesik Reisha, so people don't really mention Pesik Reisha for various reasons. I'm not sure Pesik Reisha itself might, you know, be applicable, but there is another reason given. Explanation of the Torah Lishma, who is another, otherwise also known as the Ben Ish Chai, source number 34. I didn't translate these sources because I wasn't planning on going into them, but he also gives a similar type of explanation in his mind, and you might like this explanation better. In his mind, the reason that there's no prohibition of walking in the rain is due to the fact that the rain was going to come anyways. It was going to fall onto the ground regardless of whether you're there or not. So the fact that you interrupted it briefly and then after it fell on you, it kind of moved and, you know, fell onto the ground later on, that in his mind is not a prohibition. As opposed to in a situation where you purposefully desire to go into the river to bathe, and then you're taking, you know, your body is carrying that water out of the river into, you know, the public domain or whatever, you're into the street. That he thinks would be prohibited. That would be a problem of carrying, as opposed to a situation of rain, where rain, because of the nature of how rain naturally falls, regardless of whether you're there or not, he doesn't think it would be part of the prohibition of carrying. There's a lot to talk about for sure about that. I'm happy to take more questions about it. I didn't plan on a whole year on carrying, but it's definitely an interesting topic. Yeah, Alan.
That question's kind of, I think you kind of answered it in answering Micah's, but it's, it seems to me that what they're saying here is when they're saying there's no real worry, the rabbis aren't going to prohibit carrying the rabbanon for walking in the rain, so that implies very strongly that carrying water when you come out of a river is actually only a rabbanon, because if it weren't, they wouldn't be able to really compare them. So it seems to me, it's because the rabbis would be goes there on going out of the river at the Rabbanan, but they wouldn't be goes there coming out of the rain, the Rabbanan. And so it's not really a Torah prohibition at all.
Yeah.
Is what I think you were saying, and that's what I was going to comment.
Yeah. I mean, the very fact that Rav Yehuda is talking about this as the Gezeirah Derabbanan sounds like he's referring to rabbinic prerogative. Indeed. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm happy to take more questions on the carrying the water, the rain. I wasn't planning on so much time, but if anybody had any questions, happy to take them. Otherwise, I'll move on to the other prohibitions, the ones which are more relevant to us nowadays. Unless you're bathing in a river, this isn't so relevant. I assume most of us bathe nowadays indoor. We have indoor plumbing, thank God. And so we bathe at home, and there's no prohibition of carrying, at home. You're gonna dry yourself off in a towel way before you're gonna start walking outside in a public domain. Regardless of the fact that most of us have eruvs around in our towns, so not so relevant. But those are at least the historical prohibitions that was mentioned in the Ma'aril, the prohibition of carrying. Fine. Yeah. Yeah. A river itself, though, is only a carmelite, so it's only the rabbinic prohibition. But yeah, you're right. In fact, the Prima Gadda has a position that even if you were to bathe in a river under certain conditions, it might be permitted, whatever it is, a whole long discussion he has, even in those situations, you would only be allowed to wade into the water less than 4 amot, right? It has to be sure that the banks is very deep right away, because he's concerned that if you walk in the river for too long, you'll be pushing the water in the river, and you'd be carrying by pushing the water. So he's concerned about pushing. So you're right that in river there will be more of a concern. And that's partly where some of these concerns come up. It's an interesting topic. I don't think it's so relevant for most of us, but definitely interesting in its own right. Okay, let's move on, though, into the concerns that apply mostly nowadays. And the Ma'aril did mention the concept of schita, of extracting or squeezing out water. And I want to talk about that because that really is the main concern. When it comes to nowadays, showering or bathing, talk about these ancillary concerns, there really are what I call 3 main concerns. Concern number 1, squeezing out the water out of your hair. And hair here, not only hair out of your head, if you have a beard, potentially there's hair there. Any other place in your body that has hair, potentially there might be concern. That's concern number 1. Concern number 2 is a similar issue, but concern of using a towel on Shabbos. There's a lot of literature about using a towel and when towels be allowed, because in theory, if you were to squeeze the water out of a towel, that would be a malacha of kibus, of part of washing. So potentially there's another malacha involved with the towel. And then the third possible prohibition is, the third possible place of concern is with regard to the use of soap. And we'll talk about each of these in turn. So let's begin with the first one, the main one, which relates to the hair, relates to squeezing water out of hair. The source for this stems from the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Chav Chet Amud Bet, where the Gemara says as follows. This is source number 35. Mialdin et Aisha, the Gemara says as follows, that we have certain permissions we're allowed to do when it comes to a pregnant woman, a woman who's about to give birth. A woman's about to give birth, of course, for the most part, we consider it to be pikuach nefesh, and there, in situations of pikuach nefesh where life is in danger, everything goes, you're allowed to do whatever you want on Shabbos to save a life. We value life very strongly. And yet, nonetheless, the Gemara has the following principle. The Gemara says at the end of it, that kamar d'efsha lishnui meshaninan, when it comes to a pregnant woman, a woman giving birth, even though it's pikuach nefesh, if you're able to make a shinui, some type of small change in the way you're doing malacha, ideally you make that small change. And the Gemara goes on to elaborate on these small changes. What are these changes? The Tanu Rabban, this is the beginning of that Gemara on source number 35. When it comes to lighting a candle, her friends can light a candle for her. If a woman needs oil, for whatever reason, the pregnant woman giving birth needed oil, her friends, they can bring her oil in their hands. Meaning instead of using, taking your pitcher of oil and bringing the pitcher, you should pour the oil into your hands, cross the street, and bring the oil to your friend in your hands. If there's not enough oil in your hands, right? You need more oil than in your hands. So mevia bisara. So what you should do is you should put the oil in your hair and carry the oil through your hair, through the Reshut Rabim, through the public domain, to your neighbor's house, and that way you can then extract the oil from your hair to be used. That's the Gemara's statement. The Gemara now comments on, sorry, that's the Braita. The Gemara then comments on this Braita. What do you mean you should put the oil in the hair? Wouldn't that be a problem of schita, of extracting the, once the, it's true that, you know, the oil is being carried in a stravim in a strange way, but now when you're finally at your friend's house, you want to use that oil, you're now going to have to extract the oil out of your hair. So wouldn't that be a problem of a biblical prohibition of schita, of extracting oil, water or liquid from, you know, from an object? So Rabbi Yosef, Darmi Tervayu, so answer that Tumaran give is in schita b'sear, there is no prohibition of schita in sear. There is no prohibition of extracting, you know, liquid out of hair. That's the Gemara's conclusion. It seems to be that that's the way the halacha paskins. Why is it true? Why would there not be schita? Why would there not be a prohibition of extracting in hair? So in general, let me just explain. I'm not going to tell you which malacha it is because there's a lot of debate about which exact malacha. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But one of two potential malacha relates to extracting something, specifically extracting liquid out of something solid. And so, in general, for instance, let me give you an example. I cannot, for instance, squeeze, I cannot squeeze like a tomato and extract all the liquid, or squeeze a grape. If I squeeze a grape to extract like the juice of the grape, that would actually be a biblical prohibition of dash and mefarik of extracting liquid. And so likewise, the argument is that if I extract, you know, any liquid out of a solid, it'd be prohibited. So I would have thought that the same thing would apply with regards to hair. If I extract liquid, oil, or water out of hair, it'd be prohibited. The Gemara teaches us there's no schita b'sear. Why would there not be prohibition of schita b'sear? So a few reasons given in the Rishonim. The Ritva gives, for instance, in source number 36, she has te'arot in a bolin, because hair does not absorb water, does not absorb liquid. That's the Ritva's argument. It's not actually true, because we do know that hair gets wet. Hair is not hydrophobic. Nowadays you may have heard about, you know, these like newfound clothing technology, the hydrophobic clothing that, you know, expels water. The clothing can't get wet. So that's not true of hair. Anyone who has hair taking a shower or bath knows your hair is still wet for a while afterwards. That's just the reality of hair. It does seem to absorb some water, but I guess it doesn't absorb enough water, or doesn't really consider to be absorbent sufficiently, such that it's considered to be bolea. That's the Ritva's argument. Likewise, the Bir Halacha gives something similar, where Bir Halacha's Mishneh Berurah, where he argues in source 37 that Schita lo shayach is the last line. That schita only applies to something which is very, very soft, or a word that might call it nowadays, something maybe perhaps very absorbent. But something which isn't so absorbent, something which isn't so soft, like hair, it's not, you know, it's soft, but it's not that soft, it's not that absorbent, so it wouldn't apply in that situation. That's kind of the reasoning why it wouldn't apply in general. So it's an interesting question in its own right. Why? For a bris, it's actually not so obvious that we would bring everything. After the bris, we would, but not before the bris. There's actually a big debate in Balamor and Ramban. It's like a separate discussion. When it comes to pregnant women, why would a pregnant woman require this shinoi? It's a side topic in its own right, but I'll just answer it because it's worthwhile mentioning. There is a lot of literature on the topic. It's not something that you're not the first person to think about. It doesn't have to be political to think about why would we treat a pregnant woman, you know, differently than every other type of sakana, every type of danger on Shabbos, where we're typically so used to the principle of sakana nefasho doch in Shabbos that for the sake of keeping someone's life, we're willing to, you know, throw out the whole Shulchan Aruch and do anything you can on Shabbos. So one of the main reasons that's often quoted, the Magen Mishnah suggests, is that by pregnant women, because it's the way of the world that women give birth, you know, after all, if in Israel, you know, there are thousands of women who give birth almost daily or weekly. And so because it's so typical and so used to, the Magen Mishnah suggests that the rabbis instituted that because it's the way of the world to do so, that we try to encourage you to do a shinoi, to do some type of change in the way you perform, you actually save a person's life. That's the way the Magen Mishnah quotes it. At the end of the day, though, all poskim agree that if a woman's life is really in danger in that moment, then we don't have to use a shinoi. If a shinoi is going to actually, you know, endanger a person, you shouldn't do a shinoi. You should just automatically save a woman's life without, you know, any other, any mitigating stops or trying to change your behavior in some slight way. That's just like the general point, but I'll also add, just as an aside, that at least for Ashkenazim, the way that they're Ma Paskins, is that ideally, even for any Sekhana Nefasha, non-pregnant woman, ideally also she'd use a Shinoi, even Pikuach Nefesh, assuming that the Shinoi does not detract from the person's wife. But it's a topic for its own question about Pikuach Nefesh, but I guess I'll just respond in brief. I don't know if it satisfies you, but it certainly, that's kind of like, there is a lot of literature on the topic. Regardless, let's go back to this Gemara. So the Gemara seems to suggest that Shechita does not apply Beseir. There's no prohibition of squeezing out liquid from your hair. And that's the way that some Rishonim seem to quote this Gemara. The Ritva seems to imply that in source number 36. However, the way that others understand this Sugya is that it only means that there's no biblical prohibition of Shechita, but there might actually still be a rabbinic prohibition. So for instance, source number 39, the Magen Mishnah, understands from the Rambam, it's quoted in source number 38, the Rambam is referring, when the Rambam is quoting his halacha, that when he's permitting that ein shechita baseir, there's no problem of extracting water or liquid or wringing liquid out of your hair, but mihu isur ika, there is a rabbinic prohibition that exists. Likewise, the Ohel Moed, a rishon that we don't really speak about very much, he's kind of like an early version of the Tur that the Tur kind of supplanted, and we don't really learn so much anymore, but he's kind of an early version of the Tur. The Ohel Moed argues explicitly, Mishi Rachas B'mayim Yinagev Atzmo, this is source number 40, Mishi Rachas B'mayim Yinagev Atzmo B'mayim She'alav, V'mayim She'Roshon Lo Yinagev, She'af Api She'im Chita B'Seyar Mikomokom Yesh Isur. Even though there's no prohibition on a biblical level, there is a rabbinic prohibition to squeeze out hair, and therefore you should not draw your hair on Shabbos. That's the Ohel Moed P'sak. And indeed, Le'halacha, the Mishnah Berurah quotes, that hasochet se'ar or source number 41, hasochet se'ar or patur aval asur. When it comes to squeezing liquid out of your hair or out of leather, it is not going to be biblically prohibited, but it is rabbinically prohibited. And so the conclusion of the sugya seems to be that there is actually a rabbinic prohibition to squeeze liquid out of your hair. There's machloket rishonim about it, but that seems to be the way we end up asking. If so, how then can I ever, you know, dry my hair? If I do take a bath or a shower or whatever it is on Shabbos, or Yontiv, more likely, I take a cold shower, whatever it is, how then can I dry my hair? So it's worth mentioning something very significant. And that is something that the Igrot Moshe points out in source number 42. Igrot Moshe makes the following point. He said, the question was raised to him, Imutar lichot ziknop B'Shabbat. Are you allowed to wash your beard on Shabbos? And so, as part of his analysis, the Igros Moshe makes the following point. V'tzarich lomar, b'kavanat tirut beit Yosef, b'kevan shurak isur b'drabanan mutar. In this situation, we're only referring to a rabbinic prohibition, right? According to everyone, even if it's prohibited to squeeze out liquid from your hair, it's only going to be rabbinic. And so it's going to be permitted. If you're not intending to actively, you know, squeeze out the liquid, it's going to be permitted. Why? Because here's his point. There are, in theory, two prohibitions relating to extracting liquids out of solid. Right? We know that there are 39 biblically prohibited malachot, 39 different things that are prohibited by to do on Shabbos. And two of them relate to extracting liquid out of solids. One of them is called, what's generally called shechita, which refers to, it's a tolda of milabin. Milabin is the prohibition of laundering. And so one of the acts of laundering, what do you do to launder clothing? One of the things you do is you squeeze out the liquid, you use water, you know, you absorb the water and you squeeze out the water. And so one of the prohibitions of laundering relates to squeezing out water. That's one situation in which extracting liquid out of solid is prohibited. But there's another situation, the malacha of dash, malacha of extracting. And this refers usually to fruit, right? Dash is literally the malacha of threshing, but it's often extended also to what's called mefarik, to extracting liquid out of fruit. So for instance, I mentioned earlier, if I squeeze grapes in order to, you know, have the water, the juice of the grape, you know, out of the grape, that would be the biblical prohibition of mefarik, of dash, and I would be liable for that biblical prohibition. And so when it comes to extracting liquid out of hair, we have to ask which of the 39 melachot is the problem. What are we talking about? Are we talking about the prohibition of schita midin milabin as part of laundering, or are we talking about it midin dash as part of threshing, as part of extracting? Which one are we talking about? And this is a question that relates not just to washing hair, but really it's a question that provides all of Hilchos Shabbos. Whenever we talk about extracting liquid, there's a well-known Rabbeinu Tam. If everyone learns Hilchos Shabbos, you'll learn about this Rabbeinu Tam. It talks about laundering and all sorts of things. It's not our topic, but it's really a big question. So Rav Moshe Feinstein makes the following argument, that when we talk about squeezing liquid out of hair, we clearly have to be talking about the malacha of dash, of extracting. It cannot be the malacha of laundering. Because Rav Moshe Feinstein has the following principle, because we can't talk about the principle of laundering when it comes to your body or to your hair. Laundering refers to clothing. You do not launder yourself. You don't put yourself in a washing machine. That's just not, it's not a relevant category. So that's Moshe's contention. Does everyone agree with that contention? The truth is there's actually some debate in the Rishonim about it. Like there's actually some literature on the topic. The consensus of most Achronim is like Rav Moshe Feinstein. Indeed, Minchat Yitzchak has a similar argument. Rav Nathan Karlitz have a similar argument. Both they all seem to agree that really is no prohibition of laundering when it comes to extracting liquid out of your hair. The prohibition that referring to is the prohibition of mefarek, of extracting. Why is this important? Why do I bring this up? I mean, it's interesting, you know, to learn the concepts, but why is this so important? Because there are some very important exclusions, situations in which the prohibition of mefarek does not apply, but in theory, the prohibition of schita, midin milabin, would apply. One of which is, what if it is li'ibud? What if the liquid that you're extracting, you're not intending to keep? You want to throw it out. A very common example, I'll give you a very classic example, this comes up all the time, is a woman who is nursing, or more specifically, a woman who wants to express, who wants to pump into a bottle, right? She's not actually nursing, actually she wants to just keep the milk for later. So, there's a prohibition of mefarik, of extracting the milk from the woman's body. That would be a problem of mefarik. And so many achronim suggest, and I think this is the typical psak, it's what to talk about, but this is the typical psak, is that it only be permitted if the liquid goes li'ibud, if the milk is ruined. So a classic psak that many rabbis will suggest is that if a woman wants to pump milk on Shabbos, she has to first put the detergent or some type of soap that would ruin any of the milk in the bottle right when it gets there, so that way none of the milk can be preserved. That's the typical psak. There's a lot to talk about. I don't want to go through that whole sugya now, but the point I'm trying to make is that in general, when it comes to extracting liquid out of a solid, when it comes to the malacha of dash, of mefarik, of extracting, if the liquid is lost, you're not actually using that liquid, it is not going to be prohibited. And so, the argument Rav Moshe makes is that when I extract water out of my hair, right, I take a bath, I take a shower, and after my bath or shower, I dry my hair with a towel, right? Am I using that water, right? No one reuses the water. Right, even if you have a lot of hair and the water is really soaking and you end up squeezing the water as you're leaving the shower, you're not reusing the water there. No one does that. No one reuses the water. Instead, right, the water just goes down the drain. And so because we're talking about the malacha of dash, because we're talking about this malacha where ibud is such a significant exclusion, because the water is going to go to ibud, you're not going to use this water, therefore he thinks it's going to be permitted. And therefore, he said, or Moshe argues, that even though it's a psik resha, it's a case of denalichale, I don't want this water, I don't care about this water, I don't care about it being absorbed, it's going to be permitted according to everybody. That's Rav Moshe's contention. And therefore, when it comes to showering, when it comes to the concern of the water out of your hair, for the most part, it's not really going to be a concern in terms of, at least according to Rav Moshe, of taking out the water, because I don't really want that water. However, there's an interesting question to be had of how, indeed, should I then dry my hair? And actually, the Achronim give a few different explanations, a few different reasonings, and partly it's based upon how much do you think there really is a prohibition here happening? How much do you think there really is a prohibition of chita, of squeezing out the water, or is there no prohibition at all? So, for instance, I quote in source number 43, 44, It's just a good summary of all the sources. Deershu Mishnah Berurah, there's like the new blue Mishnah Berurah Deershu, has like a footnote. So the footnotes, they kind of quote all the later Achronim. So one of them, they talk about the following principle, source number 44. When it comes to drying your hair with a towel, so they quote a few different achronim who explain how to do it. Because of a Ben Ishchai, so the Ben Ishchai gives one explanation, one suggestion. When it comes to drying your hair, you shouldn't dry your hair vigorously. You shouldn't do it quickly and vigorously, but you should do it very slowly. Kind of like patch a little bit here, patch a little bit there. Do it very slowly. Do it very, you know, softly, in such a way that you're not really squeezing the water out of your hair. A few different people who all give the same explanation. That what you should do is you should place the towel on your head, on your hair, but you shouldn't, you know, press hard on it. You're kind of like tapping it, like softly. And by tapping it softly, you're avoiding from like really, you know, squeezing the water out of your hair. It's kind of almost naturally being absorbed into the towel. That's the argument of these achronim. The Gershon continues, Agon Rav Chaim Kanievsky, katav she'en lagat v'se'ar klal. According to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, there's actually no heter to dry out your hair. There's always going to be a problem, and therefore you shouldn't touch your hair at all, right? Only be able to take a bath or shower on Shabbos or Yontiv if you had very short hair. So otherwise, you would have this concern. Meidach, on the other hand, though, Das Hagar Neshlomo Zalman Orbach, She'im Amayim Nivla'im Miyad V'tochem Agevet, that if the water is immediately absorbed into the towel, the Eino Nir'im Ba'ayin, and you can't see the water, right? You can tell the water, the towel is wet, but you can't actually, you know, the towel is thick enough that you don't actually see the liquid in the towel. Ein Isur L'Nagvam, there's not going to be any prohibition to dry your hair. And that means prohibition, that means you could dry your hair normally. You wouldn't have to, you know, do it softly in a slightly different manner. You could just dry your hair with a towel the way you would, you know, during the week, any standard way. And a lot of this debate really stems from a question of how much do you think there really is a prohibition of Shechita B'Se'ar? How much do you really think there is a prohibition of drying your hair on Shabbos? According to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and likewise, it seems like an extension of Rav Moshe Feinstein's argument, there really is no prohibition. The water is going to the ibud. You're not using that water. You're not even seeing the water. The water automatically is going into the towel. Therefore, it's going to be permitted. According to some other post-scheme, it's still going to be slightly problematic. And therefore, we want you to mitigate the issue as much as possible by drying your hair softly. You can read at force number 43. I'm not going to read it inside now, but you can read Ben Ishchai's kind of his argument for why this would work and why it'd be better. Why it's better to go softly. And of course, there are those posting like Rav Chaim Kanievsky who think that really drying your hair would be still problematic of this rabbinic prohibition and there's no recourse, it really would be problematic. That's kind of a summary of the issue in terms of drying your hair with a towel. Yeah.
I'm not drying any part of your body that was really wet. Is there a problem with schita with the towel?
Let's get to schita the towel in a second. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, great. Any other questions or comments about drying your hair with a towel? Okay, so what about the towel itself? Because I didn't quote here a lot of sources, but there is a lot of halacha sources about using a towel or sometimes with something else that was a concern that if, for instance, I use a very light towel to dry to gather up a lot of liquid, there's a concern that I might end up wringing the towel afterwards and squeeze out the liquid, right? I might end up squeezing out the liquid out of the towel and by thereby be washing the towel in effect. That would be really a prohibition of schita, of laundering. I'd be laundering the towel in effect. And so most posts, for the most part, think you shouldn't use too much water. For the most part, at the end of the day, as long as you have a normal towel, I've never seen in my life someone, use a normal towel and then wring out the towel afterwards. I mean, it's maybe a small towel, but very a normal towel, it's not really very common. And so, Shlomo Zalman, source number 45, you can see it explicitly, he says, Mishim Chashash Libun Shel Magevet, Nami Leit Bei Dechoshu Derech Lichloch Sharinan. There really is no concern about laundering the towel, assuming it's a normal towel, and assuming you're not using, you're not trying to dry up an immense amount of water. If you try to dry your bath, you stick your towel in the bath, that may be problematic. But to dry your body, most poskim don't really think it's a concern, and for various reasons relating to how melabin is defined, and the rabbinic prohibitions associated with it, it's not really going to be a concern of using your towel. You could dry, you know, the rest of your body normally without concern. The parts of your body that have hair, there is a discussion we saw earlier about how to dry your hair on Shabbos. Any other comments or questions about that? Okay, great. Let's finally talk about the third issue that relates to bathing or showering on Shabbos, the ancillary concern, the issue of using soap. And this issue comes up already in the Ramah. Source number 46, the Ramah, or Moshe Israelis, quotes in the Shulchan Aruch, the Asur lirchot yadav b'melach, you can't wash your hands in salt, the koshikin b'borich, the Korean zayif b'la, you can't, as well in what we call nowadays soap, b'shar chilev, or shimluch al yadav, v'havi nolad. Why can't we do this? Why can't we use soap on Shabbos? Because we're concerned that when the soap will, disintegrate from its solid form and become liquid in effect, what you're doing is you're doing a prohibition of nolad, of creating something new. And there is a rabbinic prohibition of nolad on Shabbos. So for instance, perhaps the source where this comes up, look at source number 47, the Mishnah Berurah explains having nolad, v'dami l'ristuk shelag u'barad. Where does this source come up in Rishonim? It comes up when it comes to squeezing snow or squeezing hail. That if I squeeze snow such that, you know, it melts and that the water comes out of the snow, that would be a prohibition of nolad, of creating something new on Shabbos, which is rabbinically prohibited. And so, because of this rabbinic prohibition, the Ramah argues it likewise is prohibited to use soap on Shabbos because I am transforming this, you know, hard bar of soap into liquid. That's the first thing the Mishnah Berurah quotes, according to Ramah. He then mentions that Magen Avraham might disagree. It's not clear it necessarily applies here, might not apply here. Fine, that's all regard to prohibition of nolad. However, the Mishnah Berurah then continues and adds there might be a second problem when it comes to using a bar of soap. V'ayin, this is the second paragraph, source number 47. V'ayin, the Sefer Tiferet Yisrael, shekatav d'beborit shelanu shehi raka lekuli al masur mishum imachik. There's another concern that comes up when it comes to soap nowadays, a bar soap, which is the problem of memachik. Memachik is one of the 39 melachot, refers to the melacha of smoothing. In times of the Mishkan, smoothing refers to if you have a hide, a piece of leather, of animal skin, and you wanted to use it to write on it or some other purpose. So one of the things you would do after skinning the hide off, you would smooth it out, right? You're trying to get rid of all the fat and the hair and anything else on it. So you smooth out the skin. And so the rabbis extended this prohibition, not just to hide, but anything where you're smoothing it out, where it was, you know, it had a certain form and now you're trying to make it smooth, that would be prohibition of memachik. And the Tiferet Yisrael argues, what do I do when I have a bar of soap? What I do effectively is I'm smoothing it out, right? It used to be have a certain height, and now I'm kind of like roughing it out until it becomes more smooth, more even. That's what's happening when I use a bar of soap. And so, according to Tiferet Yisrael, therefore, any time I use bar soap, it'd be problematic based on a prohibition of memachik. Indeed, that's the way that we tend to paskin. Sfir Shabbos Gachata, source number 48, paskin is explicitly this. You shouldn't use soap, whether it's hard soap or soft soap, meaning it's still a bar soap, but it's just a little bit softer. Because, to summarize what we saw in Mishnah Berurah, there's two potential prohibitions. There's a prohibition of molid, of making something new, right? It used to be solid, and now it's going to be liquid when it's in your hands or on your body. There's also going to be the prohibition of smoothing. However, you would be allowed, though, to use liquid soap, right? Liquid soap is already liquid, so you're not creating anything new, and you're also not smoothing out liquid soap. It's worth mentioning as an aside, I'll mention this completely as an aside, but the Shmir Shavuz Gilchata quotes, it's not clear why machik even applies when it comes to soap, because machik generally, right, nolad probably would apply. Creating something new, it really would be a problem of creating something new on a rabbinic level. When it comes, though, to the prohibition of smoothing out, so usually the prohibition of smoothing out is I want to smooth out for a purpose, right? I want the hide to be smooth so I can write on it. That's why I smooth out the hide. But when it comes to here, I don't really care how my bar soap looks. Like, who cares how it looks? Like, I'm not smoothing it out so I can, you know, have a nice bar soap. I'm smoothing it out so that I can, you know, take whatever's now on my hand and put it on my body. That's why I want to smooth it out. And so it's not clear in terms of the halacha that memachik really applies here. There's some, Shmuel Shavuot Gachata has a long in the footnotes, source number 49, I quoted part of it, where he discusses whether it really would apply. And based on that conclusion, he disagrees a little bit. He thinks certain situations might be permitted. Not really, I want to focus on it too much because we're running out of time here, but you can see source number 49 yourself, and there's some discussion to be had about Mamachik. But in other words, to summarize, let's summarize everything we did so far tonight. We saw that when it comes to the prohibition of bathing on Shabbos or bathing in cold water or showering in cold water, while the Sephardim might not be think as a prohibition, there's a very, very strong practice within Ashkenaz, within German and any Ashkenazi Jews, quoting the Ramah, to follow the practice of not bathing in, or showering in cold water based on the concern of these ancillary issues. And we saw a number of these ancillary issues that can come up. We saw potentially the issue of cleaning the water. We saw the concern potentially of carrying water in a Shuta Rabim when you leave the river and you're, you know, walking outside, you might be carrying the water on your body. We spoke about briefly about, you know, the tangential issue then about what happens if it rains. Why is that different? We talked about that briefly. We talked about the issue of hair, squeezing out hair, and any of the potential concerns there, and how you would dry your hair with a towel. We talked about briefly about potentially the concern of squeezing out water from a towel, and we now just spoke about the concern of using a bar of soap. Any questions or comments? I want to just mention one last thing, otherwise I'll take questions and we can end here. But yeah, so next week I want to talk, next or not next week, in 3 weeks, because next week, Memorial Weekend, we're not going to have class, and the week after is Shavuos. In 3 weeks, I want to talk about the issue of mikvah, which is very much related to everything we spoke about tonight. It's related to hot water. It relates to bathing in general. It's very much related, and most of the sources talk about that topic, so we'll definitely get into it. It's definitely a very worthwhile topic. But I want to mention the very last point, because I mentioned this last week, and I want to get back to it. Rav Moshe Feinstein, we saw last week, had his tshuva, where he talked about he didn't necessarily think there was a prohibition of showering on Shabbos. And he argued that the minhag that used to exist back in the day not to bathe on Shabbos in cold water, that wouldn't necessarily extend to showering. And so he actually quotes these sources, and you can look at source 50, we don't have time to go inside, but he says as part of these sources, he actually goes through it, and he says all of the reasons the Maharil quoted, right, the reason of carrying, the reason of swimming, right, those reasons do not apply when it comes to showering at home, right? No one, you know, is going to be, you know, swimming in your shower, or no one's going to be carrying the water outside of their shower. They shower indoors, you know, indoor plumbing. So it's not really a concern. Is there potentially a concern of schitat, of wringing your hair, you know, squeezing the water out of your hair? So he concedes maybe when it comes to schitat, there would be a concern. But he says, and this is in the very middle of that paragraph 50, even if you were to argue, and it's not clear just what to say, maybe it wouldn't apply, maybe it's a different type of schita, but either, even if you believe that schita would apply, squeezing hair, water out of hair would apply when it comes to showering, we do not extract from previous minhagim about something similar. Even if that similar thing has a similar reason, the rationale behind the prohibition exactly the same, nonetheless, because the actual minhag applied specifically to bathing and not to swimming, we're not going to extend the minhag from bathing to swimming. And for those of you who were in my class for the Sunday class on Igros Moshe about kitniot a few weeks ago before Pesach, we mentioned that Moshe makes a similar argument that we do not extend the minhag of kitniot, the prohibition of eating, you know, various legumes, for Ashkenazim on Pesach, we not extend that prohibition from those things which were prohibited by the Rishonim in Ashkenaz to new things. So we won't extend it to potatoes, we won't extend it to peanuts, which what we're talking about in that context. And so he makes a similar argument here. We do not extend the prohibition of Shechita, extend the prohibition of bathing in cold water on Shabbos to showering in cold water on Shabbos. And as well, he makes the point, if when it comes down to the reasoning as to why they prohibited showering or bathing on Shabbos, they prohibited bathing on Shabbos for a total of four reasons. Right? We went through the four different reasons. And so Moshe argues, it's possible then that the concern of only one reason of Shechita wouldn't be enough to prohibit showering. Right? Maybe they're going to have this minhag to prohibit bathing if we're worried about all four reasons of, you know, carrying the water, of swimming, of of cleaning the water. Then we'll talk about also prohibition of slita, of concern of squeezing out your hair. But when it comes to only, if only concern is a problem of slita, drying your hair, then we're not going to be as concerned. We're not going to apply this minhag. And so Rav Moshe's conclusion, we saw the rest of his teshuva last week, Rav Moshe's conclusion is that it's not clear that the minhag would extend to showering as well, and he thinks that in theory showering in cold water on Shabbos would be permitted. And so I'm going to end the shiur here. We're about to daven mincha very soon, but everyone, feel free to ask any questions or email me if you have any questions, and we'll continue again in 3 weeks. Have a great night.